Reading from the Jivadharma, chapter 10, Nitya Dharma and History. Nyaya Ratna, if as you say, Vaishnava Dharma has been perpetual in existence, what new insight did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu reveal for which he should be given special regard? Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Taksur Unmuvatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Tapitam yena bhutale Svayam rupa kadamayam Vidati svapadantitam Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha Kripa shindu baye bacha Patitanam bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, greetings from Vrindavan. I don't know, somehow this must be a special class for whoever there. I don't know how it'll come out, but you know, I have about a month left here, and I started a kind of a sadhana where it's 5 o'clock, I would walk to Radha Damodar. I think it was about a half hour walk. The way I walk, it could be really quicker. So I walked to Radha Damodar, and anyway, I got lost on the way there, and somehow some rickshaw came, and I got there, and it's just so sublime. The Seva Kunj, where Krishna had the Rasa dance. Now they've walled in some part of that to represent the original where Krishna had the Rasa dance. But originally, even Loy Bazaar, Seva Kunj, they were all part of that area. And that's why so many temples were built up there. But Seva Kunj, the place, the forest bower of service, had a planned service, had a planned the pleasure of the object of your service, had to not think about yourself, but think about others. And somehow or other, when the six Goswamis lived here, they would congregate at some Radha Damodar temple. There were many temples, but that was the one they congregated to plan service. How Krishna can be pleased, how Guru can be pleased. And then 50 years ago when Prabhupada needed a room, somehow there were rooms for rent at Radha Damodar. So by the transcendental system, Prabhupada was also there for service. He was there for how to do service. And he planned the spreading of Krishna consciousness movement and the Radha Damodar movement. And that's not a coincidence that he was with the samadhi of Srila Rupa Goswami to get his inspiration, because Rupa Goswami, Mano Bhishtam, he knew the secret of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he knew the secret of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the inner heart, which is essential. If you want to serve someone, you have to know the inner heart. And you know, it's no coincidence that what is there, the samadhi of Jiva Goswami, the samadhi of Krishnadas Kaviraj, the Pushpa Samadhi of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the samadhi of Srila Rupa Goswami, Bhajan Kirtir of Rupa Goswami, the Bhajan Kutir of Srila A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada, Radha Damodar deities, such an incredible. And at that time in the morning, you know, you see the real sadhus. You see the real sadhus. You see the real sadhus. And then I had to leave to come back to the class. I could only stay for a few minutes. And then I got completely lost. I did this. I got completely lost. And I still can't figure it out where I wound up, going in the wrong direction. Finally, I saw a policeman. He told me, you know, you went the wrong way. I don't know where I was. To this day, I don't know where I was. So that was 20 after 6 here, which means the class starts at 6:30 here. There's no way I would get here in time, so I flagged down a car, and they drove me right here. So somehow Krishna wanted this class. So again, the story of people coming to Krishna consciousness, the generation after Lord Chaitanya. And according to who they are and what their present system of belief is, they need a different touch or subject to clear the doubts about Krishna consciousness. And so this is about a professor, Harihara. And Harihara was having worshipped in Krishna with Vaishnava mantras. And somebody was preaching against Krishna consciousness, and he went to an assembly. And the person made the statement that nowhere in the sacred text is this Vaishnavism. It's something that's newly created, especially by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so he's confused about it, and he goes to Nyayaratna, who is also very opposed to Vaishnavism. Basically, it's ruining his business. It diminishes the worship of the demigods. It's against the impersonal conception of the absolute truth. And it's against Brahmanism being a monopoly in spiritual life. So they decide to go to the forest bower in Gotram Dweep, that's the scene of the novel, where we've been following how various people have come to Krishna consciousness and how all in the enlightenment of those people, we're getting a systematic study of all the tattvas. So now this question comes up. Is Vaishnavism newly created or is it eternal? Now we've been listening to the arguments. Generally, who represents the Vaishnavas in any discussion is Vaishnav Das, formerly a Mayavadi sannyasi who came to the path of bhakti. He's very learned. And Paramahamsa Babaji, the guru, whenever there's a debate or argument, he seems to just tell him to do this as a service. So, what did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu reveal? And he explains that Vaishnavism is like a lotus flower which gradually comes into bloom when the time is right. So what happens is the full bloom of Vaishnavism is to worship God in spontaneous love. And that's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave. That when God comes in his fullest manifestation as Krishna, which necessitates manifesting without majesty, which covers the heart, the revelation. When someone is in a majestic position, their intimate side does not come out. So Krishna, basically Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in this budding of Vaishnavism, really fully revealed worshiping God in spontaneous love. So Vaishnav Das explains how Vaishnavism was there at the beginning of creation with Lord Brahma, because Krishna spoke to Lord Brahma in four instructions, the four aspects of knowledge, which is Bhagavad Gyan, knowledge of the Absolute is Bhagavan, Maya Vigyan, understanding of God's external potency, Sadhana Bhakti, the practice of achieving the goal, and Prema, which is the goal. And so this is the basis of Vaishnavism, to explain at the beginning. And then he describes how Prahlad took this, and then Vyas, and then Ramanuja, and Madhva. And then when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, he explained the supremely confidential essence, awakening up, the awakening of praying through the chanting of Sri Harinam. This is the priceless possession. And this was not fully revealed before. Anatita charim charat kuninaya vatirna kalo simarpiyatam unito jvala vishram shabhaktisham. This wasn't revealed before. And given so freely to everyone. So then Nyayaratna said, okay, but if kirtan is so beneficial, why don't learned pundits hold it in high esteem. So Vaishnav Das says, well, your problem is your definition of pandit. Pandit means actually someone who's enlightened in knowledge of the Shastra. And it refers to one who has knowledge. But he said, in this day, you know, people are known as pandit if they can show off like sophistry of Nyaya Shastra or Smriti Shastra, and, you know, present things to attract people. But some pandits, they don't understand the true import. They don't really understand the true import of the Shastras. And actually, in Kali Yuga, those who are known as pandits are just expert in deceiving themselves and others by arguing uselessly. I'm basically reading. And those kind of pandits, they engage in heated debates over inconsequential things. But they never, different rules, grammar, different rituals, but they never discuss the ultimate reality, which is knowledge of the jiva's relationship with the absolute truth and the method for attaining it. And if you want to understand prema and kirtan, you have to ascertain these matters. So Nyayaratna, he's the one that's sent there to oppose. He says, all right, I admit that there are no qualified pandits these days, but then why don't high-class Brahmins accept your Vaishnav Dharma? Brahmins are situated in the mode of goodness, and they are naturally inclined to the path of truthfulness and exalted religious principle. So why is it that almost all Brahmanas are opposed to Vaishnav Dharma? The Vaishnav Das. You are asking the question, so I am compelled to answer. Although Vaishnavas are naturally opposed to criticizing others, I will try to answer your last question if you will not feel pain and anger at heart and if you sincerely desire to know the truth. So, nature of Vaishnavas, they don't want to criticize, because criticism is generally born from envy. And the basis of envy is our own desire for superiority. It's so rooted within the heart. And therefore, that tendency, that envy of others, results in criticism. Envy is in the heart, criticism is when it comes out. Because what criticism is, it fulfills the objective of envy, which is to put people down. Which is to put people down. So that I can be superior. So that's what criticism is. And Vaishnavas are not into that because they are not into being superior to others. They're into serving others. So it's not their nature. It's just not. That's actually the symptom of Vaishnava. Yamatsaranam sitam. Devotees, they're not envious, and they're free from the propensity to criticize others. So, the Vaishnav said, because you're asking, I'll have to answer, and I'll try to answer your last question. If you don't feel pain and anger at heart, and if you sincerely desire to know, I'm going to have to contradict you. I'm going to have to criticize. And you're asking me. So I'll answer if you don't feel pain by this. Because what I'm going to say, it may be antithetical to what your beliefs and values are. So Nayaratna says, Come what may be, our study of Shastras imbued us with a fondness for tranquility, self-control, and tolerance. There is no question of not being able to tolerate your words. Please speak openly and without hesitation. I will certainly respect whatever is reasonable and good. So basically, it's an argument. So he said, basically, bring it on. I'm not fearful. Bring it on. And this is what we do as Brahmins. We engage in debates, and we're not afraid. So basically, bring it on. So, Vaishnav Das. So now what he's going to do, Vaishnav Das, he's going to say, this is absolutely a misconception that most Brahmins are not into Vaishnavism. So that was Nyayanarada. Okay. Then why are the highest class people in society not into Vaishnavism? So Vaishnav Das is going to say, well, I'm going to explain that. And he said, please consider that Ramanuja, Madhva, Vishnu, Swami, Himbarka, those are the four acharyas for the four main Vaishnav sampradayas, were all Brahmins. Each had thousands of Brahmin disciples. In Bengal, our Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a Vedic Brahmin. Our Nityananda Prabhu was a Radhiya Brahmin. And our Advaita Prabhu was a Virendra Brahmin. Almost all Goswamis and Mahajans were almost all Brahmins. Thousands of Brahmins who are the very pinnacle of Brahminical lineage have taken refuge of Vaishnav Dharma and propagating the spotless religion in the world. So how can you claim that high-class Brahmins have no regard for Vaishnav Dharma? We know that those Brahmins who honor Vaishnav Dharma are all high-class Brahmins. However, some people have taken birth in Brahmin families, have become inimical towards Vaishnav Dharma because they are marred by the faults of degraded family lineage, undesirable association, and false education. Such behavior only demonstrates their misfortune and fallen condition. This is no evidence that they're actually Brahmins. So you're saying the Brahmins are worshiping, are not worshiping. But who are those Brahmins that are not worshiping? Because generally, Vaishnav means humble, because the very core of the Vaishnav's heart is to accept happily a position that's not supreme and to serve happily those who are higher. That's what a Vaishnav means. And so real Brahmins are Vaishnavas. Otherwise, you're impersonal, and you have the egoistic conception, actually, that I am God. So, really, fully spiritual means Vaishnava. Because spirituality has to do with service and humility. Of course, there are Vaishnavas that don't exhibit these things. Of course. But at the core of Vaishnavism is consciousness, which is about service. There's no other meaning to consciousness than to serve and to love. That's what person means. Person means love. Person means the ability to reciprocate in love. And love means humility. Love means to accept for your guidance the desires of your beloved. Even a mother is surrendering to the child, to the child's will, to the child's desires when they're young. So it is especially noted that according to Shastra, the number of true Brahmins in Kali Yuga is exceedingly small, and these few are Vaishnavas. Prabhupada said in the world, you'll hardly find even one real Vaishya. You know, there's some Shudras and Vaishyas. It's so hard to find a real Kshatriya, what to speak of a Brahmin, a warrior. When Brahmins receive the Vaishnav Gayatri, which is the mother of the Vedas, he becomes an initiated Vaishnav, but a Brahmin. However, due to the contamination of Kali Yuga, some of these Brahmins accept another non-Vedic initiation and abandon their Vaishnavism. Granted, the number of Vaishnav Brahmins is very small, but that is still no reason to manufacture a conclusion that is opposed to the tenets of Shastra. So now he asks his next question. Why is it that so many low-class people become accept Vaishnava Dharma? In fact, in the time of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and in Bengal, many low-class people were coming to Vaishnavism. And therefore, Vaishnavism wasn't respected. If your spiritual path doesn't attract the more Madhabaralog, bigger people in society, more higher class people in society, it won't be respected. It won't be respected. So Vaishnavism at the time of Bhakti Siddhanta, certainly the time of Bhakti Vinod Thakur, it wasn't respected. And the nature of something that's pure is to become contaminated, especially in terms of religion, because pure religion is the absolute platform of service. It's the absolute platform of service, true religion. And the nature of the material world is to enjoy and control. So even people who come to religion will struggle with the true tenets of religion and what it demands of them. And therefore, inevitably, caught in that duality between what my desires are and what the good life is, people will inevitably change the tenets of the religion subtly to accommodate their desires. It's just such a fact. Phenomenal fact of the world. I talk about this often, appropriating things for our ego. It's so easy for our religion to be broken. You know, even now, you know, since Prabhupada, there's great effort by many sincere people to preserve the purity of Prabhupada's mission. So Vaishnav Das makes a very interesting point about this. I'll read it and comment on it. He said, this should not be a cause for doubt. Most low-class people consider themselves quite wretched and downtrodden, and thus they are eligible for the mercy of the Vaishnavas, without which one cannot become a Vaishnav. Humility cannot touch the heart of one who is intoxicated with the pride of high birth and wealth, and consequently it's very rare for such people to obtain the mercy of the Vaishnava. So there's things that intoxicate one with ego and attachment, and it's high birth, and you're attached to anything that helps you control the world for your own enjoyment. High birth gives a lot of power. Janma Aishwarya, wealth, gives a lot of power. Shuddha, erudition and learning becomes a thing. Shribya, having beautiful women or being a beautiful woman gives you power. Or being a handsome man. Beauty gives you power. So these are the main things. Birth, opulence, knowledge, and beauty. And people are mad after these things. So people can get intoxicated, as Queen Kunti prays, Janmaishvarya Shuta Shribir Edamana Madat Puman Navahatya Bidaitumbai Tvama Kinshina Gosha, that one becomes intoxicated to these things. It's hard for him to surrender. Somehow, someone introduced me to this lady that has recently come to Krishna consciousness or something. Kind of interesting. Living in London, seems very quite successful as a psychotherapist. Seemed fairly aristocratic. She had two children in her 20s, early 20s. And somehow or other she got contact with Krishna consciousness. And she went to Vrindavan 5 times in 1 year. And now she's just moved here. But somehow or other I met her and she came on my little Vikram. Afterwards I was talking with her. And she was saying how she doesn't need a guru because she talks directly to Krishna. Why does she need a guru? She talks directly to Krishna. You find this in Vrindavan, especially Pisa. She was originally from Transylvania in Romania. What do I need? I could speak directly to Krishna. And I told her, well, what bhakti means is to please Krishna and to follow what Krishna's will is. And Krishna says that one needs to serve the devotees. In fact, in the Adi Purana, what does it say? Krishna says to Arjuna, one who claims to be my devotee is not my devotee. One who is a devotee of my devotee, he is my devotee. Because it's about service. It's not about having Krishna for ourselves. It's about serving Krishna. And those who love Krishna naturally are living their lives by what pleases Krishna, and in that relationship understand that. But it's the dasa, 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 anudasa. It's the position of humility. You want to be a devotee, you have to be happy with what you are. And we're parts of Krishna. We're meant for his service. Even in the Bhakti Siddhartha, there's a very beautiful statement. It said, devotion in the form of kirtan is unlimitedly merciful to those who are devoid of a sense of false prestige. Those who are devoid of a sense of false prestige. So, and therefore it says Kali Yuga is actually beneficial. And we see in our own lives that Krishna puts us in a position to become dependent on him. Pride means I am the doer, I am controlling, I don't need Krishna takes away that power. I've seen it all the time. That's how the spiritual process works. He lets us show that we are dependent on God, so that we can have the right consciousness in relationship to reality. So humility is everything. Without humility, there's no service. Without that core feeling in the heart, the happiness, the satisfaction in the heart, with not being great, not being the controller. And more than that, wanting not to be the controller, actually embracing. Embracing the position of love is the highest thing, not the position of control. That type of core satisfaction in the heart is essential to move forward in bhakti. So, Vaishnav Das is saying, if you're seeing so many low-class people are coming, well, there's a reason why that. And sometimes you see a person who really, you know, does not have prestige in society, does not have the accoutrements of power and position and things. True humility is the most beautiful thing that one can possess. It shines from the heart. The really, really not having the false ego, not being in this world to defend our position or to promote our position, you know. And one who is humble, he can be honest because it doesn't disturb him if people see that he's not perfect or not, you know. So much of our time is spent building up the senses so people won't see that we're anything less than perfect. When you meet someone who's truly humble, without false ego, he doesn't think, move to enhance their prestige. And he's not afraid for someone to see, look, this is who I am. I may not be so great. This is only one thing focused in their mind. Not being great, but to serve the great. To serve the great. Nyayana Ratna, I don't care to discuss this subject any further. I can see that you will never quote the harsh description from the Shastra of the Brahmins of Kali Yuga. I feel greatly pained when I hear particular statements from the Shastra, such as this one from the Varaha Purana. Rakshasa Kalam Astitya Jayanti from it. Taking refuge in the age of Kali, demons are born in the family of Brahmins. Let us not pursue this topic any further. Now, please tell me why you don't respect Sri Shankaracharya, who is a limitless ocean of knowledge. So, it's a fact that, and I've seen it in India, that the most demoniac people can be born in families of Brahmins. It's just the position to control in a caste system by being of a higher birth. In Kali Yuga, it attracts people who have that desire to control and enjoy. And a lot of times, those people that don't can be born in very humble positions to facilitate their Krishna consciousness. Haridas Thakur, the Namacharya, in his previous life, he was Lord Brahma. But when you have position, it blinds you to Guru, actually. You got to look at the story of Indra. He was sitting as the king of heaven. He was so used to that affirmation that you are the king, you are the controller. His guru came in and he didn't stand up. He didn't respect his guru. That's the worst offense, in one sense. You offend your guru because the elephant offense is if you offend the Vaishnavas. So like it says, you may cultivate a garden very, very carefully, even put a little fence around it and weed it. But if an elephant comes, it's all trampled. So the weeds of bhakti are just trampled. When we are envious and inimical and wish or do harm to a Vaishnava. But even if we do that, we still have a shelter of guru to purify us. But if you offend the guru, that's called the lion offense. Even worse. Okay, I'm going to stop now today. Would anybody like to ask any questions or say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Gail.
Gail, you have
the muting secret.
Somehow or other, because I always get letters after the classes. I try to unmute. I wanted to say hello.
I almost had to write you a letter like that, I think last Sunday. I tried to unmute and it kept saying, the organizer has muted the conference. I just couldn't get through. But anyway, I'm glad it worked out this time. Actually, I have two questions if time allows.
Yeah, go ahead.
One is just now, what's his name? Ratna Nayana or something like that? Ratna Nayana.
Nyaya Ratna.
He said, you know, he told Vaishnav Das, don't continue anymore with this explanation. And I couldn't understand the mood in which he was saying that. Why was he saying don't continue anymore?
Every question that you have, I've already thought about and just hoping that Gail doesn't ask it. I had the same question because, it seems like he's kind of acceding that, that he already knows, But anyway, at least the face value of it is he knows. Once you get into this discussion of Brahmanism, that the Shastras is going to condemn people who take Brahmanism just by birth as the ultimate criteria. And not only that, but there are verses which he knows he's going to hear. How in the Kali Yuga, the demons, those who want to control and exploit the world, they'll be born, and a lot of Brahmin families are just good. It's beautiful Brahmin families, but a lot are so corrupted that, I mean, I know that personally from living in Vrindavan, I can tell you that.
Mm.
Although there's also beautiful families that really are just so mode of goodness. Yeah.
Mm. Okay.
What else?
The other thing was, way back more toward the beginning of the lecture, you were describing, I think, four aspects of the absolute truth, and
what he's referring to is this Chatur Shloki Bhagavatam. the four verses spoken by Lord Brahma at the beginning of
creation.
And the first verse is that the form of God is eternal. The second verse deals with what is the illusory potency. The third verse deals with what is prema bhakti. And the fourth verse deals with bhakti. So the first two verses, sambandhigyan, and sambandhigyan means God, the living entity, and matter. God's spirit, matter, spirit, and the controller of both, to have a thorough understanding of it. So the first verse deals with God and the living entity. The second verse deals with the material energy. So you actually have a very clear view of reality. And reality is God and God's energy. And what makes things look as not God is this illusory potency. So basically saying God is everything, and what doesn't look like God is only, what's separated from God is only by his illusory potency. And then it said this is the practice for how we will, this is the practice for how we will, attain that, and this is the result of doing so.
So the third verse, which is about prema bhakti.
Well, yeah, because before you have a practice, you have to have a goal. So sometimes the goal is mentioned first.
Okay. All right, thank you, Maharaj.
Oh. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj, Radhe
Radhe. I love saying your name, but you're right, hey. Hare Krishna. Thank you.
Thanks for the wonderful class, Maharaj.
Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello?
This is Katya Maharaj. Thank you so much for the class.
Katya, so nice. Always so much, Gabby. You're always listening. Thank you. Okay, thank you. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hello. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj.
Govardhan Bhakta, Hare Bo.
Hare Krishna. Nice class.
One more person say hello? Thank you. Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, we'll end for now, though. Thank you. Okay, Vanchakalpa Tulubhyasta Kutumbhaye Bacha Vachitanam Bhavanevyo Vaishnavevyo